You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with National MP Carl Bates.
Last week, Education Minister Erica Stanford confirmed the latest additions to draft curriculum changes for English and Maths, with the hope for implementation in 2026. While she says the changes are not significant to the existing system, teachers have said the draft proposes an entire overhaul and greatly increases workload expectations. Also, ACT MP Laura McClure has put forward the Deepfake Harm and Exploitation Bill to update legislation around exploitation committed on digital platforms using AI. Finally, after 30 years of MMP, the New Zealand Initiative, a Kiwi policy think tank, has proposed a four-year parliamentary term and more MPs for Parliament, among numerous electoral reforms that they think can make New Zealand more effective for representing the population. I spoke with MP Carl Bates about all of these topics, starting with the curriculum changes. Last week, Education Minister Erica Stanford announced these changes to the math and English curriculum. What have been the goal of these changes and others made to the curriculum earlier this year?
So the curriculum was last updated nearly 20 years ago. So it's been redesigned to match and reflect today's fast-changing world and help our students thrive for the next generation of students and tamariki going through school.
Teachers have been calling for implementation of these changes to be delayed, stating that there isn't enough time to prepare and that the turnaround is much shorter than what is typical for such changes. Will this request be accepted by the government?
Look, this change is ultimately about the fact that the National Led Government has ambition for our students. We believe in the opportunity they have to learn and grow, and we want to raise achievement across the education system. So it's ultimately about better outcomes for our young people. And as a parent, I don't want to see that process delayed. I'm sure the government doesn't want to see it delayed. And really, when teachers take off their union hats, I'm pretty sure that they don't want to see it delayed either.
Some other concerns voiced by teachers relate to the extent of changes and likely increase of workload for educators. How will this be considered? I want to ask in particular with relation to the already existing discontent with strikes in relation to the resources and pay provided for teachers.
Look, it's unfortunate that the strikes happened and are continuing to happen, and we really continue to encourage teachers and unions to go back to the bargaining table. It's just, you know, you and I have spoken about this previously. It's just politically motivated when the first item on the agenda of the PPTA with the minister was Palestine. It's not about our kids. It's not about educational achievement. It's not about the things that are actually going to make a more successful journey for our students and young people going through school. So change does come with work that in any organisation, in any process where there is change, it does mean that there's a period of transition, and I appreciate that, and I'm sure my colleagues do as well. But ultimately, this is about lifting educational achievement in New Zealand, and we need to do that now, not in 5 years' time or in 2 years' time. We've got to start that process now. And we've, as a government, been making a raft of changes to enable that to happen. And we're seeing the benefits of that already: structured literacy, structured math. And now this updated process of updating the curriculum that's been written by Kiwis for our Kiwi kids. And I'm really looking forward to the journey my kids will go through with this new curriculum.
How will students be accommodated who may fall into the gaps or get caught in the transitional period of these changes? Like you've said, it's been 20 years since the last time, and I mean, there's a lot of students who won't get the benefit of this full new curriculum change. How will those students be accommodated?
So I think that speaks to exactly why we want to achieve this change as fast and as practical as possible. Obviously, students who are going through a year on the current curriculum will complete that. And I trust that teachers will help those students bridge any challenges they find in that transition from one perspective on the curriculum to another.
My final question to this topic. Te Akite have criticised the new curriculum document, saying that it's been rewritten to include fewer Māori words and fewer references to the Treaty of Waitangi. Was this change intentional, or is there any are there any plans to look to resolve this issue?
So in terms of te reo Māori, you and I have spoken previously about the focus that this government's got on supporting te reo in school and in curricula where appropriate and where it helps develop. Te reo, for example, for the first time has the equivalent of phonics learning materials for year one, year two as well, I think. I can't remember the exact years that that goes up to, but it's the first time in the New Zealand school system that the government has provided te reo phonics material to support the learning of te reo school. If you listen to the Minister of Education this morning, she was interviewed speaking about the value of education in te reo and culturally appropriate learning. So it's something that the government is really supportive of and sees as a focus, but in the context of a wider curriculum that enables students to learn all of the skills that they need to be successful in their life's journey.
Moving on to the Deep Fake Harm and Exploitation Bill from ACT MP Laura McClure, what are the existing protections for people who are harmed by deep fake or other AI-generated content, and what does this bill seek to cover?
So it's a really interesting time for this bill to be drawn from the biscuit tin, and the National Party caucus will meet and agree on what our position is in terms of the bill now that it's been pulled. It's obviously in a backdrop of the inquiry into online harm that young New Zealanders face. It's looking into these questions as well, and what the regulatory framework is and legislative framework is, not just about deepfake, but about online harm as a whole. And I can see some potential need for some regulation in this space to protect victims, but we'll have to have those conversations, as I say, as a caucus, and come to a final position on it.
Are there any other issues in particular that you've noticed surrounding the potential consequences of AI use, like maybe in political content or commercially, where it may misrepresent certain populations, for which you hope that this government will seek regulation or legislative change?
So as I was saying, we've got this online inquiry or inquiry into online harm that young New Zealanders face. It naturally has touched issues that aren't just about young New Zealanders, because some of these harms are faced by people of all ages, but the inquiry is being specifically focused on online harm for young New Zealanders. I've been chairing that as the Deputy Chair of the Education and Workforce Select Committee for the last 2 months, and that's touching on exactly your question, the different areas of challenge, both around AI but also social media, the question around banning social media for under 16-year-olds, the role of online regulators. You know, there's a range of issues that could be addressed or changes made to strengthen the framework we have around online and digital harm. And I think also a reminder for us as parents that we have a responsibility to teach our children safe use of these devices as well. One of the examples I often use is, you know, as a parent, I can be held accountable for leaving my kids at home alone all day, you know, at a very young age. But I can give them my cell phone and let them use it, and there's no consequence for that. And I'm not suggesting that there should be, but it is an interesting question to think about in the context of all of the issues that we need to look at around online harm. And I think ultimately there is potential, as we say, for some regulation in the space and some changes, but ultimately that's going to be a caucus decision in terms of exactly what we do to make those either legislative or regulatory changes.
Finally, I'll move on to my last topic about the New Zealand Initiative's latest report after 30 years of MMP. They've released a study last week with some ideas for electoral change, including a 4 rather than 3 year parliamentary term and an increase to MPs in the House from 120 to 170. What are your initial thoughts on these changes?
So the four-year term and term of Parliament enabling four-year term legislation amendment bill has been recommended by the Justice Committee back to the House by a majority, and that would introduce legislation to enable a referendum by New Zealanders on whether they support the extension of the parliamentary term from 3 years to 4 years. And if that passes in the House, then there would be a decision about whether or not there is a referendum that occurs alongside the 2026 or the 2029 election. And if New Zealanders supported that, that would then result in an extension of the parliamentary term to 4 years.
On the case for more MPs, they've argued on the capacity for accountability for MPs, the incredible workload undertaken, and the need for better representation proportional to our country's size. In your own experience, are these relevant issues faced in our political system?
So if I think about the electorate that I represent, the Whanganui electorate, it's currently 5,700 square kilometres. It's growing to 11,200 square kilometres for the 2026 election, obviously with a population base similar to other electorates around the country. So that does mean an increase in driving and engagement across a much broader or larger electorate. But as an MP, I take the view that if you ask a busy person to do something, they often get it done, and that's the way that I'm looking at it next year as I go into the campaign for 2026 for that larger electorate seat of Whanganui, which, as I say, will now include much of the Ruapehu district. I don't think that New Zealanders like us talking about how much work we do or how many MPs there should be. I think there are many New Zealanders that probably think there are too many MPs as it is. So for those of us, and there are many of us that just get out and get the job done, I'm comfortable with the status quo.
We've had the MMP system in place now for 30 years. Do you think it's been doing a good job so far, or are there any other reforms that you'd like to see happen?
It's not a question that I've considered personally from the point of view that it is the system that we've got. It's a system that I work within, and I think that there's good accountability for me as a local Member of Parliament for Whanganui, where my constituents next year will have the opportunity to do a performance review. And say, you know, has he been out and about enough? Are we seeing him? Is he advocating for our community? And I know that I've got colleagues across the House who will feel the same way as they head into next year's election. And that's the way I look at it in terms of the public's ability to performance review my role as a Member of Parliament.
That was National MP Carl Bates on the New Zealand Initiative electoral reform proposals, the new draft curriculums, and the deepfake harm and exploitation bill.
That was our weekly chat with National MP Carl Bates.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.